Good morning, everyone. My name's Dave, and welcome to Insights for Health, providing up-to-date information on various health topics. Insights for Health is brought to you by The Healthy Habit at 451 St. Clair Street. At The Healthy Habit, we help you to help yourself with your health one step at a time. And being Movember and Prostrate Health, joining us today is Dr. Philip Rashotis. And Dr. Philip graduated from the University of Guelph with a master's degree in nutritional science. He later graduated from the Canadian College of Naturopathic Medicine, where he's also an associate professor. Good morning, Dr. Philip, and welcome back to Insights for Health.
Good morning, and it's always a treat to be on with you.
So, Doctor, with prostate health, so statistically, where does prostate health rank among men?
Yeah, it's a big deal, and it is the month of the year to be talking about, although I would hope it's not reserved just for November.
Right.
The number one cause of cancer death among men and women is lung. And then number two among women is breast cancer, and number two among men is prostate cancer. So it's certainly one that we need to tackle, and it's alarmingly common.
Now, we can have prostate problems, but yet not have prostate cancer, correct?
Absolutely. So we need to differentiate from prostate cancer versus what we call benign prostatic hypertrophy, or BPH. BPH is simply referring to the growth of the prostate as we age. Kind of unavoidable. It will symptoms of it will occur in 50% of men by age 50 and 100% of men by age 80. And essentially, as the prostate grows, it presses on the bladder, so that gives a man a sensation of needing to go pee. The man will complain, I wake up many times at night to go pee. Similar to women through pregnancy needing to go pee a lot because the growing fetus is pressing on the bladder.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, as it grows, it crushes the urethra, which is the tube the pee goes through. So not only do you feel like you have to go pee very often, but when you try to go pee, only a few drops comes out. So that is benign prostatic hypertrophy. We used to think it was completely different from prostate cancer, but more modern research is telling us there is indeed a link between BPH and prostate cancer.
And how's that?
The processes that drive the growth of the prostate, there's a lot of inflammation happening, and those can be drivers and initiators of cancerous processes. So if you are experiencing symptoms of BPH, it's appropriate once every year or two to go be tested for markers, blood markers, a simple blood test for prostate cancer.
And that's where that's a PSA test, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, we've had a chat about this before. And what I really want to touch on here is generally people won't recommend measuring a PSA level. It's a simple blood test, and it does give us a pretty good indicator of risk of prostate cancer. And men won't have this tested until they're into their 50s. Maybe if there's a family history, they'll look at it in their 40s. But there's really wonderful science to tell us that the younger you measure this, the better. Because PSA has a cutoff of 4. So if your PSA level is under 4, we generally view that as your risk of prostate cancer being very low. And if your pre-PSA creeps above 4, we start being concerned and we may recommend something like a biopsy, et cetera. But what some beautiful research found is that when we test men in their 20s, if you were in your 20s and your PSA was 3, and now you're 60 and your PSA is 5, that's not necessarily a cause for concern. But if you were in your 20s and your PSA was 0.2, and now you're in your 60s and your PSA is 3, even though it's below that magic cutoff of 4, that may indeed be a cause for concern. That first PSA test, the younger, the better, and it provides a baseline to see how that's changing throughout our life.
So you're seeing that range of difference. That's what you're looking for.
Exactly. How much did it go up by? It's not so much the absolute number,
yeah,
but how much did it increase by over time?
And then they talk about there's two forms of PSA, correct?
Right. And that's another big one here. So the PSA we've been talking about so far is called total PSA. As it sounds, it's the total amount of PSA floating around in your blood. But there's another test called free PSA. And unfortunately, not enough of our patients are having this free PSA tested, and we end up testing it for them. So generally, simply screening for total PSA is good enough. But if total PSA starts to be elevated, it is then very important to also have a free PSA tested. And the ratio of free to total PSA is a much, much more accurate indicator of risk of prostate cancer than simply measuring PSA on its own. Why this is important is that if we are concerned that you have prostate cancer, the next steps to confirm that are quite invasive and they have some unpleasant side effects. So rather than saying, oh, PSA is a bit elevated, let's go into next steps, it's much more advantageous to say, okay, PSA is elevated. What does free PSA tell us? And now the ratio of free to total. Are we now supposed to do a biopsy? Or is this actually looking like a situation that's a very low risk of prostate cancer?
So should a person be requesting from their doctor then both tests? Like, let's say the 20-something-year-old goes in and says, listen, I want to get a baseline. Does he request both of those, or is one enough?
No, I don't think that the free PSA isn't really necessary unless total PSA is elevated.
I see.
So if you're in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s and you're asking to check on your prostate, a total PSA is more than good enough. But if that number comes back above 4, if that number is elevated, then a free PSA test is very, very important to do. And sadly, I mean, some people are having it done. We see many patients coming in and that testing has already been done. But we have a lot of patients that free PSA has never been measured. And they're talking about prostate biopsies and other invasive procedures without having that very key piece of information in front of them.
Now, PSA stands for?
Prostate-specific antigen. And again, it's a marker. It floats around in our body, and it relates to what's going on in the prostate. Really simple blood test to do.
So the free PSA, like you were, I think you were explaining to me that a total PSA, it's attached to certain proteins, whereas the free PSA is not attached yet. It's just floating around.
Exactly. And the amount of free PSA is generally much less than the amount of total. But again, the ratio of the two provides really, really, it's just a simple chart. If the ratio is below this number, risk of prostate cancer, less than 5%. If the ratio is between this and this number, risk of prostate cancer, 10%. If the ratio is between this and this number, risk of prostate cancer, greater than 80%. So it's just a really accurate method of assessing what's going on.
So back to the symptoms then of BPH. So it's this frequency or this urge to urinate or can't urinate, and yet you feel like you have to. Those are markers or indicators to oneself that they should be getting tested.
Absolutely. And it's always a mistake to say, I'm waking up at night to go pee, this must just be BPH. And that can be an error. At that point, it really would be important to go get this simple PSA test and make sure you're not dealing with prostate cancer, because the symptoms can overlap. So most often, a man with those symptoms will just be suffering uncomplicated BPH. But it's important at that time to go get tested and make sure it's not something more serious. Another sign that we really need to be alarmed regarding prostate cancer, and I think this awareness is so key, is if a man's experiencing a lot of pain and discomfort in the lower abdomen. Lower abdominal discomfort, will often brush it off as some sort of stomach problem or IBS, but in a man, especially in a man hitting their 50s and 60s, that can be a really important sign that it's time to go get tested for potentially the presence of prostate cancer.
So this discomfort would be between the, say, the navel and the genitals?
Sure, exactly. Okay. Lower abdominal pain, yep. Discomfort that's sort of lingering, and that can be a really, really classic sign of prostate cancer. Could be something uncomplicated, could be a little bit of IBS or constipation, but it's better to be safe than sorry, right? Yeah, so any of those symptoms is something to be concerned about. And then if you go for the testing and it's indeed just benign prostatic hypertrophy with no sign of any cancer, there are very simple, straightforward treatments that can help that. And if indeed you are told it's prostate cancer, well, then there's a whole discussion we have to enter there as well, because prostate cancer can take on many different forms.
How common is prostate cancer?
It is. It's an extremely common cancer. But what we have to differentiate is there's various degrees of it. Most men, okay, you have prostate, imagine that, it's a horrifying thing, right? You go, you visit your doctor, okay, sir, you have prostate cancer. Wow, it's horrifying.
Yes.
And then you say, okay, now, well, what do I do now? And very often the physician will tell you, well, go home. You know what? Go home, come back, we'll follow up with you in a year or two. So many prostate cancers are very slow growing. It's often said that the individual is likely to eventually pass of something else completely unrelated to their prostate. That is the state of most prostate cancers. Yet off the top, we said it is the second leading cause of cancer death among men.
Yes.
Because if instead, it's more rare, but if it is an aggressive prostate tumor, then the outcomes are quite poor, and it often catches up with that individual. So just hearing the diagnosis of prostate cancer unto itself is not, I mean, it's going to alarm anyone that hears it, but we really now need to differentiate what type of prostate tumor we're looking at. Is it a common, slow-growing, unlikely to really impact your life in the long run type of tumor? Or is it a more aggressive tumor that immediate aggressive action needs to be taken to try to prolong life?
So the term cancer doesn't mean end of life here. It doesn't mean a terrible result.
Right. And the word cancer shouldn't mean end of life for anybody. You know, we have so many heroes. I'm sure we're all aware of people that have gone through these processes, and there's always hope. But yes, especially in prostate, there's literally millions of men walking around North America who have been told they have prostate cancer. And what is occurring is a process called active surveillance. You're brought back to your urologist. That is the specialist that deals with prostate issues in men. You're brought back to your urologist once a year or once every other year for follow-up testing to ensure that that tumor is still not growing aggressively, it's still small. That is a situation where integrative medicine and natural health products can really shine, because otherwise the man is just told, go home, do what you're doing. Meanwhile, there is a plethora of diet, lifestyle, and some basic supplements that can really, really, really help slow that tumor growth and even reverse its growth. If the setting is unfortunately one of advanced prostate cancer,
right,
that is a very hard situation to deal with. I humbly request people get a referral to an integrative doctor who is experienced in specifically that area. Advanced prostate cancer is a horrible situation, and there's certainly hope and there's certainly things that can be done. But that's going to take a skilled and experienced individual to oversee that process.
So I just want to summarize a couple of points and then have you comment. So for having any sort of issues with our urination, not being able to, starting and stopping, the dribbling, some irritation, that's probably a sign that the prostate's enlarged and that we should probably get that checked. Any lower abdominal pain, we should be proactive. Get a PSA done. The younger, the better for that baseline. So in our 20s even. And lifestyle can make a big difference.
That is absolutely correct. Tick, tick, tick. Absolutely true.
Doctor, what are some natural proactive strategies we can take?
Sure. With both EPH and early stage or even late stage prostate cancer, first we have to make a comment about just diet and lifestyle. Achieving and maintaining a healthy body weight and adopting a Mediterranean type pattern diet. I'm sure, I hope people have heard about it. Simply, it means up your fruit, up your vegetables, eat healthy fats, raw olive oil, raw flax oil, keep meats as lean meats, fish preferably, fish and poultry. So the diet pattern is extremely helpful for both BPH and prostate cancer, both for prevention and for treatment. Beyond that, if we're dealing with uncomplicated BPH, meaning you have these symptoms, you were diligent enough to go to your doctor, you confirmed that the likelihood of prostate cancer is zero or near zero, and you're dealing with symptoms of BPH, which can be very invasive. It wakes the man up many times at night. We've heard lots of reports of the importance of sleep and how if our sleep is disturbed, it impacts many aspects of our health. So this is an important thing to treat. In our practice, we like to use generally a combination product, and the combination of what? The types of ingredients that have been shown to be very helpful for BPH, the hallmark natural health product ingredient would be saw palmetto.
Yeah.
A meta-analysis is something where we take every human study in existence and we mathematically combine the studies as though they're one, and it's considered a powerful thing. and a meta-analysis in the Journal of the American Medical Association concluded that saw palmetto works better than the prescription medication for BPH, which is called finasteride, and that it has fewer side effects. And so why saw palmetto is not more commonly prescribed is just beyond me. Beyond saw palmetto, other ingredients that have been shown to be very helpful for BPH include plant sterols. We often hear about plant sterols for lowering cholesterol, but low-dose plant sterols have been shown to be very effective for shrinking the prostate and reducing symptoms of BPH. Some other key ingredients include stinging nettle, include rye flower pollen, include an herb called Pygium africanum. So a good product for prostate would combine all of these ingredients at a therapeutic dose. And when that's done, symptoms of BPH can often be reversed very quickly.
Yeah, we carry a lot of different prostate supplements, and there's some overlap there. There's some similarities, there's differences. You're most familiar with New Roots brand, and that's the Prostate Perform. They have multiple ingredients beyond what you've just mentioned.
Yeah, so those are the real hallmark ones. Those are the ones that the science really validates, I guess. Those are the ones that have been shown to have the greatest impact. So we certainly look for something that contains those ingredients, again, each at a therapeutic dose. The advantage there is some things in natural medicine, a therapeutic dose might be 10 grams a day, and you can't really fit 10 grams of something into a pill. The good news for a lot of the ingredients that help prostate is that at a dose of 100, 200, maybe 300 milligrams, they're shown to be very effective. So you're able to combine three or four of those ingredients, five each at their therapeutic dose, and that's why you get the kind of outcome that you get, which is usually symptom relief quite quickly. A good combination of ingredients like that should often deliver symptomatic relief in as quickly as a week.
A man, let's say, is taking other medications, maybe a blood thinner or something like that. Is something like a prostate supplement compatible with that?
That would really depend on the individual case. Some of the herbs I mentioned would, in fact, I mean, you've mentioned the one medication that we need to have the absolute greatest caution with whenever we combine any natural medicine. And that, of course, is if somebody's on a blood thinner. So some of the herbs I mentioned for BPH would not be appropriate for an individual on a blood thinner. So if there's a question about that, I would have the individual either consult with their doctor or consult with their naturopath. And either way, they should be able to come up with a strategy that is going to respect potential interactions with whatever medication the person may be on.
The list that you gave us, does it work both for the BPH and the cancer?
Not so much. So now, in early stage prostate cancer, the strategy, the diet strategy remains the same.
Okay.
The supplemental strategy is different. We do like to use a combination for BPH, even in individuals with early stage prostate cancer, but such a product is no longer highest on the list. So what I would say is most important for an individual with early stage prostate cancer is, again, first and foremost, those diet strategies. And then beyond that, the type of natural health products we're looking for. Number one would be a good quality lycopene. So it's a tomato extract standardized to lycopene content, and we want to hit about 30 milligrams a day of lycopene. Other really key ingredients for early stage prostate cancer would include flax, usually as ground flaxseed. Soy foods can be very helpful, and there are certain soy extracts that have been researched for helping early stage prostate cancer. So those type of ingredients really take the stage as, vitamin D, forgive me, we have to include that. Vitamin D is incredibly important in prostate cancer. Frankly, everyone should be taking a vitamin D supplement, but especially if you hear that you have early stage prostate cancer or any stage prostate cancer, vitamin D becomes very important. So I'd say those four ingredients really take the stage as most important for prostate cancer. And then if the individual is willing, we do like to add a combination product targeting BPH, even though the concern is early stage prostate cancer.
So diet and lifestyle, that Mediterranean diet is a very proactive approach. Saw palmetto has been proven to be the most effective, even beyond, you're saying, the medical prescriptions?
Yeah, the common prescription given for BPH is a medication called finasteride. And in head-to-head comparison, saw palmetto performs equally or slightly better with infinitely fewer side effects.
Any final comments to summarize our show here, Doctor?
Don't be shy. Don't be embarrassed. Go get a PSA test. It could save your life. The younger you get the test, the better. But if you're already in your 40s or 50s, no hesitation. Go get a BPH test. Mediterranean dietary pattern, fruits, vegetables, healthy fats, lean meats is miraculous for both prevention and treatment. And consider a good combination product if you've gone through the diligence and you know that your symptoms are uncomplicated BPH. If you hear the word prostate cancer, don't fear. Make some diet changes and look for lycopene, flax products, soy products, vitamin D. They're going to go a long way to making sure that early stage prostate cancer doesn't become something more serious and life-threatening.
Thanks, Doctor. So I've been talking with Dr. and Professor Philip Rashotis. He's a naturopathic doctor with a master's degree in nutritional science.
So men, now is the time. If you currently don't have a prostate issue, now is the time to be proactive and have a PSA test. Now is the time to take a supplement to protect your prostate health. Are you making frequent trips to the bathroom? Now is the time for Prostate Perform by New Roots Herbal. Prostate Perform is a proven supplement to reduce prostate swelling for less frequent urination and fewer trips to the bathroom. So visit The Healthy Habit at 451 St. Clair Street in Chatham and ask us about Prostate Perform. Thank you for listening to Insights for Health, brought to you by The Healthy Habit, where we help you help yourself with your health.